So the Carolina Hurricanes have unveiled Jeff Merrick a, well, it's not a new jersey. It's sort of the same jersey, but it looks a little different than the old jersey.
Carolina Hurricanes don't have a new jersey. Stop lying to people. Can we talk about hockey now?
The gear is part of hockey, sir.
Hang
gear
on.
Is identity.
I'm sorry.
I defy you to tell me that gear and jerseys and the look of a team is not part of team identity.
And you know I love, you know I'm a gear geek. Come on. Listen to who you're talking to. You want to talk about nylon or wax laces? I mean, come on. Of course I'm a gearhead, but I'm sorry, adding a couple of stripes on a sleeve?
And taking away some stripes, too. They took away the little checkered board thing that they had on their, the little hurricane flags thing that they had on the jersey.
Oh, the warning flag is gone. All right, so the warning flag is gone.
It reminds me of the clean look that the Lightning went for when they revamped their whole jersey, but I think that's the point, is that when the Lightning changed their jersey, it was a different jersey. This is the same thing, just a little bit different looking, right?
Yeah, exactly.
A road sweater looks vaguely Habish, I'd say. And the home sweater is just a red menace. But again, what it comes back to, though, Merrick, is this. They didn't do anything with the giant swirly toilet bowl logo. As I referred to it on Twitter today, the swirling cosmic asshole on their chest.
Oh, my.
They did nothing with that logo. I don't consider that logo to be iconic. I consider that logo to be something that could use a revamp. And throwing it on these jerseys does nothing for me.
Well, you have a problem, though, with natural catastrophe jerseys to begin with, don't you?
This is true. I don't like the Avs jerseys. You are correct. Some kind of a weird natural disaster thing that I have about these.
So if you were living in Ontario, then you would hate the Guelph Storm, essentially, is what you're saying.
Not the original
Guelph Storm jersey logo or the new Guelph Storm.
I already hate
Guelph
Storm.
New these days. Okay,
with all my heart.
We've established that. Yeah, well, it is a little tweak to the jersey. I will say this, and I sort of mock it by saying, you know, they didn't really change much, but I do like this better. I do like this cleaner look better. I wasn't a big fan of the old yesterday's Carolina Hurricanes jersey. I do like this one better. Mm. I do like sleeves on the arms. I do. But then I'm a little bit old school like that. To me, the Hurricane still looks too busy. And it's one of these things where there's a difference between seeing something up close and saying, yeah, that really works. I like that. But then you think to yourself, okay, we have to play to the last person, you know, the last seat at the arena. What's that logo going to look like to him or her? And that's why the best example is, I'm really split, is the Minnesota Wild jersey and the Minnesota Wild logo, where up close, I love it. It looks fantastic, but when I step back a little bit, it just looks like a smear, right? It just looks like it's like Jackson Pollock just whipped some paint at a jersey. Said, here you go. Here's your logo. Where's my check?
Right.
When you move back, it doesn't say anything to you. It just looks like a stain.
They're okay. They're fine. The Dallas Stars will reveal theirs tonight, which is going to be the big one. That's the big change. And then these jerseys are all right. Another note from the unveiling is that this is from Sean Leahy on Puck Daddy. Another note from the unveiling is that Carolina's alternate black jersey will remain in their rotation for next season. Interesting.
You know what's weird about hockey?
What?
And the color black. If you look at any other walk of life, if you're trying to hide a couple of pounds, if you want to make yourself look a little bit slimmer, what color do you wear?
Black. It's slimming.
Okay, how come that's not true of hockey? How come the moment you put on anything black in hockey, you look bigger? You look larger.
Because of the
How
gear?
Does that work? I don't know what it is.
I don't know.
In any other aspect of our society, when you put on black, you just look leaner, except for hockey. Hockey just makes black look bigger. I don't know why.
I'm so happy that we did get through the scourge of the black jersey. Which was a thing for a while, right? I mean, that was the problem. Everybody wanted to have their black jersey.
Yeah.
As a Devils fan, I'm always been enormously impressed with Lamoriello for not going down that road. Because you could have had a black jersey with a Devil's face on it and sold about a billion of them. They wouldn't even need like someone to help out Vanderbeek if they just made a damn Devil's jersey with a Devil's face and a black jersey and stuff. But for a while, everybody had one. And there are certain teams in sports that deserve to have one. And certain teams that don't. And I'm sorry, like, the Carolina Hurricanes in a black jersey does nothing for me. You know who should wear the black jersey? the Philadelphia Flyers should wear a black jersey. They're scary.
Why?
And they're intimidating. They're badasses. The L.A. Kings should wear one, because when I think of L.A., I think of gangs and gang colors. There are teams that should wear black jerseys and teams that shouldn't. Like when the Senators came into the league,
so
wearing black jerseys with their dopey numbers up in the 80s, you didn't earn that, Ottawa. You can't just start with a black jersey.
So hang on a second. So you're thinking, so then jersey colors should always be changing reflective of the team that you have?
Yes.
So let's say the Philadelphia Flyers go to a more skill-based team. They get rid of some of that brawn. Ooh, disgusting. Oh, fighting. Call the police. Oh, this mayhem, this nonsense. We have to stop and think of the children and the concussions. So if they go to a team with a softer touch, you think that the jersey should reflect that?
Orange. They already have them. They can wear those all the time.
Isn't that weird that orange is the tough color in the NHL? I've always thought that. That bizarre. I mean, I think it's kind of cool. I love the color orange.
Halloween. It's because of the jack-o'-lantern smile and the Halloween colors. It all evokes spooky things. To answer your question, as soon as Terry Pegula bought the Buffalo Sabres, they should have changed their colors to either green for money or wore a clear jersey for natural gas. One of the two.
Oh, because again, if I wanted to make money off this hockey team, I'd just drill another oil well.
Right.
Thank you, Terry Pegula.
Right. And the Phoenix Coyotes should change their colors to that of U-Haul.
But,
I mean, honestly, obviously we know this to be true.
Who should do that? What? I missed that.
The Phoenix Coyotes.
Oh, jeez.
No?
Just a big truck.
Right.
AMC Campbell?
No.
Yeah. Anyway. You know, it's, with the Carolina Hurricanes, as well, when you look at this team whose history draws from another team, do you like it or not like it that they've completely obliterated their past off the jersey?
Yeah.
There is no remnant of the Hartford Whalers
anywhere.
There was a
graphic that I saw that compared what people thought this jersey was going to look like to an old Whalers jersey, and it looked a little similar, but I don't think that's what they ended up going with. No, it should be like a whale caught in a hurricane would be the perfect logo. Like the adorable little happy whale mascot swirling around the big toilet swirly in the middle of the jersey. That'd be perfect.
No, don't you know what I mean? Like I think of jerseys as a piece of that team's history. Mm-hmm. And if part of your history is you came from another team, shouldn't that kind of be reflected somewhere on the jersey? I've always felt that way. That it should be something from your past. The team that you used to be. So there should be something Winnipeg Jet on the Phoenix Coyotes, for example. I always thought that is part of your past. And the jersey is a sort of emblematic of your team and your team's history.
Yeah.
And by not having that on there, you're essentially whitewashing part of your past or just denying that it exists.
Yeah, that's true. I like that idea of there being some sort of a...
Something. Some sort of relic of the bygone
time.
Yeah.
But Merrick, you're going to be taking away
something
valuable
thrasher.
Real estate. You're going to be taking away viable real estate from the advertisers that will be on the
jerseys. That's going to happen, Wish. You know it. I'll tell you exactly how it's going to happen. I'll tell you how it's going to start and where it's going to end up. It's going to end up on the jerseys, folks. Sit down, calm down, relax. It's going to happen. It is inevitable. But it's going to start on the helmets.
Oh.
That'll be the entry point. That'll be the dipping the beak in the fountain before Woodstock jumps in and has a bath. That's where it's going to be, Snoopy. That's where Woodstock dips his beak, right in there, a little dip, and then he goes in for the big plunge, and then it's on the jerseys. And it's going to be the test market. Will the fans push back? We put a little, McDonald's arches here on the helmets. That's where it's going to begin, bud.
Unrelated question of the day. Give a letter grade to the conference finals so far through four games.
Puck.com
at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter, hashtag at MVSW. Both series are 2-Cobb. We will, of course, talk about the Penguins' disastrous game 2 later on in the podcast. Coming up, though, Tracy Myers of CSN Chicago, who will tell us all about game 3 of the Los Angeles Kings Chicago Blackhawks series. With that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Early. Today. Wow. Business.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
I'm still convinced that kittens have like alien DNA in them.
Mom, I don't care. I'll eat lunch later.
When's he come get me? Come get me. Hey now.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I'm a professional blogger.
Come on, Kyle. Eat the sandwich. You're wasting away to nothing. Eat the piece of chicken, Kyle.
This is a sickness. This is an illness.
Hello. Nurse.
Debate Hockey.
What a cute little puppy. Oh, he's going to grow up to be a big, strong dog who challenges for the Stanley Cup.
How about, will you, like, give your head a shake? Look at the history of these two teams.
Give me a break. They had a 3-goal lead in Game 7.
You're a tough guy. I guess. That's it.
I'm not
You're a tough guy.
Pop culture.
I'm down with OPP.
Did you ever find it weird that Fonz's office was the crapper?
I'm trying to find time to film myself eating a cupcake.
And more hockey.
Oh, you took a puck to the face and your teeth all melted. You got a concussion. Well, I died.
I'd agree with you if you were right.
F you. Merrick versus Wyszynski.
Let's start the show correctly. Rightly. Rightly.
Start the show proper, shall we? Tally writes in and mentions that the Calgary Flames do feature the A from the Atlanta Flames on their jerseys.
I like that. That's right.
Yep.
Very true. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Cliff Fletcher. I would have to think that's a Cliff Fletcher accent right there.
Karen Douglas writes in, extending Jeff Merrick's jersey theory of showing history to life, all wedding photos must show ex-spouses in some way.
Or the ex-husband should give away the bride or vice versa.
Oh, it's worse than Bettman coming out with a cup. Paul Vogel writes
That's a good
in,
one, Karen.
Paul Vogel writes in with something about Carolina's New Jersey, although my email is now failing me, so we'll get to him in a bit later. It is what it is with that jersey.
It's okay. It's all right.
Joining us down the line.
It's just not a big deal.
Joining us down the line from the beautiful left coast, it's Tracy Myers of CSN Chicago. Talk about the Kings and the Blackhawks at into Game 3 this evening. Hello, Tracy. How are you? Oh, geez.
Uh-oh.
You there?
Uh-oh. Tracy, how's your cell phone, Trace?
Yeah.
We're going to call Trace back. Josh, that's... Oh, my.
You know, I have enough a feeling of our act maybe already. Her cell phone wasn't good, and that's what happened there. Paul Vogel, yeah. The Hurricanes should have revealed the old Hartford Whalers logo as their new logo, long live Pucky the Whale in the Brass Bonanza. They have their own identity. I mean, it's nice that there is... I mean, you go to any Hurricanes game, you'll always see, like, Whalers jerseys there. But,
yeah.
You know, at the same time, though, it's like they do have their own identity.
And that's fine. I would just like something on there, or even on the helmet, or I don't know, anywhere, just somewhere on the uniform that pays a tip of the hat. Hey, thanks, Hartford Whalers. We used to be you.
Amit Joshi writes in, it's kind of strange that you say that they don't have an iconic logo, but they then say they should change it. Does something not become iconic if you don't change it for decades? The Blackhawks logo is very busy and has a lot of colors in it, but it's part of their history. It's iconic and people love it. It's an Indian head.
It's visible. Again, it's visible.
Visible
anywhere in the rink, and it doesn't matter
Indian
what seat you have, you can see it and you understand it.
Here's how I measure iconic. You take a picture of something and you show 100 people in some random city. It doesn't even have to be a hockey town, just be some random city. Say, what is this? Now, if you show the Blackhawks logo, you might have some people that say it's some college team or whatever, but you get a good number of them saying it's the Blackhawks. You show that swirly toilet bowl thing to 100 people, what do you think they're going to say? Carolina Hurricanes?
Cleaning product.
Yeah. Acid flashback. that's how I measure iconic, personally. Tracy is back, and she sounds good, Josh says.
There you are. Hey, Tracy, can we start this off by me asking you a personal question?
A personal question? Go ahead.
Are you sick of hearing from us?
No, not at all. There are a lot of people in this business I'm sick of hearing from, but you guys are not two of them.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, pucker up. I think the guest we've had on this podcast more than anyone else, Craig Wyszynski, is easily Tracy Myers, true or false?
True. Very true. Very true. Absolutely.
I always love taking time out to talk with you guys, so it's always a pleasure.
Sweet. Tracy, obviously the Blackhawks are up 2-0 in this series, heading back to Los Angeles, where the Kings are somewhat of a different team. Is that the song that's being sung by the Kings as they head back for Game 3?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously they have a ton of confidence coming back to the Staples Center, and rightly so. You know, when you're 7-0 in the playoffs, and I was checking the goal stats. I mean, obviously this team has not scored a ton of goals no matter where they are. I think the number is... 18 goals at the Staples Center and only 11 at the road. So, you know, a plus 7 is a plus 7. And, you know, that's where they've struggled the most. I mean, I know they got 2 the other night, but by then the game was over. You know, they seem to get a little bit more goal support for Jonathan Quick at home. So they're definitely coming in with more confidence with this one.
You know, I look at this series and I compare it to the Pittsburgh-Boston series and I say to myself, Chicago is doing to L.A. physically what Pittsburgh is trying to do to Boston, but different results for the Blackhawks, whether it's Dave Boland on Mike Richards, whether it's Victor Stahlberg on Jake Muzzin. I didn't think the plan of attack was going to be out, hit, and be more physical than Los Angeles Kings, but Tracy, so far it's worked for Chicago.
Yeah, it has, and you know, I got to be honest, I haven't checked the hit stats that closely. I don't know if they're out hitting them total, but I know that they've had some key hits. You know, obviously that have kind of shook up the Kings, and yeah, it sounds like Mr. Richards is out again, unfortunately, for Los Angeles, which I guess we all figured would happen. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, this is not the Blackhawks' overall game. If they can lick a hit on you and make an impact like that, great. But, you know, they're not going to be the team that doles out 40 hits a game by any means. But whenever they can get one, and if that's possible, they're absolutely going to do it. Guys like you mentioned, Brian Bickle's another one who's had some big ones.
Is Corey Crawford playing his best hockey of the season right now?
I think he's pretty close. Yeah. You know, and I've talked to people about this. He's never going to be flashy, highlight reel goaltender, I think. He'll get a couple here and there on the highlight reel, but not many. But he's just solid. And the biggest difference between him last year and this year, I think, is just watching him move. He has more confidence when he's moving. He's staying low a lot better. He's more square at the net. And he even mentioned that he's seeing the puck better this year. So, you know, you're seeing all those differences with him. You know, I mean, obviously, with the way the Blackhawks play defense, most of the time he doesn't have to see a ton of shots. I think what the Kings have had in the 20s, roughly, the last two games and everything, and even with Detroit, I maybe have had one game over 30 shots. So that certainly helps. He doesn't have to do a ton of work and everything, but when he has, he's come up with the big stops.
Yeah, you mentioned Brian Bickle a second ago, and he's been a nice revelation these playoffs for the Chicago Blackhawks. Tracy, any chance that they can re-sign him in the offseason, or is this the last of Brian Bickle in Chicago?
You know, I mean, the way he's going, the price keeps going up. I mean, if this team continues and he keeps making the contributions that he has, not just the physical game with some timely goals and everything, it's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough. I mean, the cap's going down. The Blackhawks are right around it as it is. You saw Nicoletti design. You know, of the two of Bickle and Stahlberg, I think Bickle would be more of a priority. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be one of those things where, you know, would they have to make, probably have to make a move to do it. You know, what moves would they make? And, you know, at what cost are they willing to pay for them? So it's going to be tricky. I'm kind of curious to see if they're going to be able to pull it off, because right now I'm not sure they're going to.
Poor Victor Stahlberg. No love for that man. He's being left out of the lineup and whatever.
Hey, man. So what happens when you complain about your power play time, Wish? Don't complain about your power play time, Wish. Coach Quenneville.
Clearly. Hey, the Jonathan Quick on the other side of the ice, I was really shocked that they were able to get to him without many screens, without, I mean, they were beating him on just shots from the outside, and I was really kind of surprised by that. Did you expect to see that from Quick, and what do you expect to see from him in Game 3?
No, I was totally stunned. You know, when you see Jonathan Quick get beat, it's more along the lines of how they beat him in Game 1, you know, with Patrick Sharp having to get one of the few rebounds he gives up, or Marian Hossa with just one heck of a deflection. But to see him, you know, get beat short side on a goal he sees, and I think a couple of them, you know, there wasn't anybody in his way or anything. That was very surprising. So, you know, with Quick, I mean, it just seemed like a blip on the radar. It's proof that even the best guy can have a bad night, even though I don't think he's had one in years. But I certainly would be stunned to see that again. You know, I think he's going to be back to the Jonathan Quick of old, and I'm sure the Blackhawks realize that, okay, we might have gotten a bit of a gift as far as, obviously, it was their work and not as much of putting them in a bad night, but it's probably going to be more of like it was in Game 1, where they're really going to have to work to beat this guy.
Okay, game three tonight, Tracy, for the Los Angeles Kings. No Mike Richards. He's still out. Upper body injury. Concussion. Oh, excuse me. Concussion. So he's not available for tonight. Having said that, his line I still thought was the best for LA in game two with, who's on the line? Penner, Carter, and the rookie, Tyler Toffoli. But no Richards in the lineup. How does that change LA's approach tonight at home?
Well, I think that, I mean, obviously they've got some depth and everything like that, and they've still got guys that they can rely upon. But, you know, I mean, that's a void. That's a void. Anytime you're missing a guy of that caliber, you're just going to have to adjust. And, yes, it is a test of, okay, who's going to step up and who's going to do what. And, you know, if game two was an example of that, obviously it was a tough night for them. But, you know, I think they'll make the adjustments necessary. I mean, this is a team that obviously – they can lay the lumber on another team, and they may be coming with that a lot more with the Blackhawks tonight. But I'm kind of curious to see it myself. You know, is this going to be another one of those nights where they really rely on Quick, you know, at home and everything? And if that's the case, it's going to be tough because I think they've relied on him way too often this year.
Last one for me, Tracy, and it's a two-parter. I'll hang up and listen. Jonathan Toews is and Patrick Kane are not producing. Why? And if the Blackhawks win the Cup, will they still find a way to give the Conn Smythe to Jonathan Toews?
Well, at this point, yeah, I'm still not sure what's up with Kane and Toews as far as you know why the goals aren't there for him. I mean, it's certainly not, especially with Toews. I mean, the work is there. There's no doubt you see it every day with that guy. But, yeah, I keep saying eventually it's going to click in, but it keeps proving me wrong. And as far as that, you know, there might be a battle royal between Patrick Sharp and Jonathan Toews for that Conn Smythe that came down to that. Because I think Mr. Sharp wouldn't mind collecting that trophy. He certainly has the points to be doing it right now. And I don't know, maybe throw Brian Bickle in there too.
He's been outstanding. And you know, I mean, and the pairing of Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, games 1-3, or was it 1-4 in the Detroit Chicago series, they were separated. And, you know, Seabrook was in the doghouse, reunited in game 5, and then the team took off. Well, last one for me, Tracy. What happened with Brent Seabrook and Joel Quenneville? It seemed at times as if it was almost personal, or Quenneville was trying to send a message, keeping his ice time around 12 or 13 minutes.
Yeah, you know, I was surprised that Seabrook's one of these guys where when he's playing well, he's great, and when things aren't going so well, it's incredibly noticeable. And you know, maybe it was just the thing of, okay, listen, I know what you're capable of, so whatever the problem is, you know, shake it off and get back to the player I know you can be. And you know, it's not the first message he sent to him. I think it was the first game in Colorado they had this year. No, it was the second one, where he, you know, a bad play by him resulted in a shorthanded goal from Colorado. And he didn't play the rest of that period. And then he came back and ended up scoring a big goal. So, you know, it's a way to, you know, I guess stoke the fire, maybe. But, you know, good on Joel for realizing, hey, I might want to put this guy in the corner. And the results have shown. I mean, those two just, they feed off of each other. And Seabrook's come up with some very big goals and very big plays because of it.
Tracy Myers of CSN Chicago, thank you very much. And enjoy game 3 out in beautiful Los Angeles.
Thanks, Tracy.
I see Blackhawks walking my way, so it might be press conference time. But thank you, guys.
Whoa,
it's always fun.
Go get the Blackhawks.
Get at it, Trace. Thanks, Tracy.
Now, here's the question.
What's up?
Are the Kings a different team at home? Because that's essentially the only question that we have left in the series. Is like, can they?
No.
No.
What? Just because they've won 14 games in a row at home and just because you know, their record on the road is mediocre. No, there's no evidence to suggest they're a different team at home.
But honestly, dude, like, it's the complete reverse of what we saw last year. It's freaky. Yeah. They were unbeatable on the road last year, and now they can't win on the road. It's very strange.
It's weird, too. And when you look at the way that they play at home, and obviously Sutter gets the matchup, being the home team with the last change, it's almost as if Los Angeles, and this is the way they want to play, they play a road game at home, and that's what they're comfortable doing. And they get last change, they get so they can dictate the line matchups. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if, you know, the comfort of being able to play a road style game at home just fits like a glove for the Los Angeles Kings. know what I mean? Like normally teams like, oh, we're at home, let's play off the emotion, let's open it up, it's party time. No. It's like, we're at home, time to button it down, boys.
It's party time. Excellent.
Yeah.
Indeed. All right, so that's game three of that series coming up tonight. I fully expect the Kings are going to win this game. I fully expect the Kings are going to win game four. I fully expect we go back to Chicago, knotted at 2-2. And then the Kings have to win one of those games in Chicago. That's it.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I hope LA wins tonight because I like one of these two series to actually be a series. It's been a dud. We were so, man, we got sold. We got played so hard, Wish. The last four Stanley Cup winners are meeting in the conference finals for the first time since 1945. They didn't even have conferences then. There was one six-team league, and that was it. But the four final Stanley Cup champions met in 1945 in the final four. Man, do we get played or what? Like, talk about expectations being elevated, and I'm a part of it as anyone else. Here I was on the podcast bragging about, well, you know, if you have a look here, it's the last four Stanley Cup champion teams that are in the final four. But the expectations for this going in was that this was going to be the mother of all conference battles. This is barely a pop gun going off. This is terrible. This is awful.
Well,
outside of parts of we're about to be four games in. I get that. Outside of parts of game one between Chicago and Los Angeles, this has been it's terrible. We haven't had games. We've had moments.
I liked game one of the Penguins series because it had a lot of that just really tense, pesty behavior from both teams. You had the Sid and Chara barking at each other thing. It wasn't a good hockey game, but at least you had some drama.
Yeah. But you didn't get what you, I mean, you didn't get that, because we went into this one saying, okay, it's going to be the classic story of the skill and the speed of the Pittsburgh Penguins against, you know, the, not the Brawlers, but, you know, the tougher team, the fierce, you know, battle-tested, tough Boston Bruins. It was going to be brawn versus brains. That's what we all thought. Mm-hmm. And instead, Pittsburgh came in and said, let's throw coconuts off the wall. Let's all be gorillas. And what the hell is that? And they tried to do it again.
Yeah, and the other series obviously hasn't lived up. I mean, Chicago's been pretty. I mean, game two was a bit of a rout. So yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah. I don't think it's been necessarily a false bill of goods yet. Because frankly, you know, if you want to have that epic, theatrical operatic series that you think could come out of one of these series, you do need someone to take the advantage early and have somebody else kind of claw back. Like, it's set up for both of these series to have that dynamic. It's just a matter of whether or not these teams are going to do it. Of the two, you obviously believe the Kings are the team that can come back better, yeah?
I do. And
right.
Mainly because they have the goaltender, and I see none of that from Pittsburgh.
Right.
Greg, you want to stop me now, or can I say it again?
No, please go ahead.
You want me to say it again? I've said it so many times
in
this podcast.
Yes,
again.
Sir. Mm-hmm.
If you have the goalie, it's 70% of your team. If you don't have the goalie, it's 100% of your team. That's the Pittsburgh Penguins.
The shots that you don't make take 100. There's 100 shots
you miss.
You miss
100%
miss
of the shots you don't take.
You miss about 100 of them if you don't take those shots. Am I right?
Yeah, Gretz. That's a good one, Wiener. You nailed it, 99.
There
Ed
you
go, big
in.
Guy.
Kings versus Blackhawks is a B- so far. If home advantage in the series sticks, this drops to a C-. So I guess that's saying if it does go 2-2, 1-1-1 as far as the wins, then he's not down with that. Penguins versus Bruins. Being a Bruins fan and seeing the Penguins lay down in such a spectacular fashion, I'll give it an A+. As far as a matchup and seeing the Pens lay down in such a spectacular fashion, I'll give it a D-. The Pens either didn't do their homework or in a timeout. Alas, school is not out yet.
You know what's so bizarre about it too?
What?
And it's weird saying this. The Maple Leafs were the only team that figured out how to beat the Boston Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
Speed to the neutral zone. Rangers couldn't do it. Penguins in two games at home haven't been able to do it. It's like the Leafs didn't have the horses to beat the Boston Bruins, and they're still a young team, an inexperienced team. Mind you, great comeback by the Boston Bruins. But didn't Toronto sort of, in front of everybody's eyes, in the most watched series of the playoffs so far, show everyone how you beat the Boston Bruins?
It's true. And came the closest. And probably would have done it had they been a bit more experienced than the ways of a Game 7. Elliot Friedman in his superb 30 Thoughts column made a very interesting point about that very thing, about how the Penguins tried to maybe beat the Bruins at their own game instead of playing a style of hockey that would bring them to victory. Says Friedman, before the series began, a couple of Penguins said they were tired of the Big Bad Bruins versus Finesse Penguins storyline. We're as tough as they are, one of them said. That's true.
Oh, Jesus.
Ask the rest of the team, the rest of the teams in the Eastern Conference, and they will tell you Pittsburgh is as physical and aggressive as any team on that side of the country, but it has to be done in the flow of the game. The Penguins may be winning the hit count, but unless but that's useless when you're so preoccupied with it that you aren't acting like yourselves in the process. And what are the things that we keep on hearing coming out of the first two games of the series? We keep on seeing the Penguins become unraveled in these physical matchups, be it getting flustered like they did in Game 1, Malkin fights, Sid barks at Chara. Game 2, Matt Cook is preoccupied with Marchand, blows the coverage, Marchand goes down and scores. And we're hearing the same thing out of Crosby, Bylsma, Iginla, everybody. We didn't play our game. We're not playing our game. We have to get back to playing our game. They tried to be something they're not in these first two games. And the question is, if they do go back to their game, does it even matter? Or have they met a team that is specifically built to beat them? And if they do fall, Merrick, in four games of the Bruins, the natural reaction is one of two things. Fire the coach, right?
Yeah.
Or try to become what you're not, which is try to become a team that can beat the Bruins. We've seen this happen time and time again throughout the National Hockey League when teams react to failure by trying to become what they hate the most. And the question is, would the Penguins then try to veer towards the muscle up, get tougher, beat up the Bruins kind of thing, convinced that's the path to victory if they do in fact fall to the Bruins in four games?
So in the offseason, you signed Ryan Clough and Nathan Horton, all these types of guys. We signed Jerome McGinley.
Nathan Horton would be actually a very interesting signing for them, don't you think?
Oh, it would be huge. Although I think Edmonton's going to make a big play there, too. But, I mean, he is a pending UFA. You know, I'm a big Frank Zappa fan. I always have been, going back to, I first discovered Zappa when I was about 14 years old. And ever since then, I've just been overdosing on Frank Zappa. And he's got a song called You Are What You Is. Whenever I think of this series, I always think of this song. It's got a great line. You are what you is what you am, a cow don't make ham. Don't try to be something that you're not. Like whenever I hear, when I hear after the games, and you're right, Wish, Penguins players and Dan Bylsma saying, we're not playing our game. Well, you're in control of that. But it's your, I don't know, ego, overrun testosterone.
Ego,
I don't know.
It's a lot of
that
ego.
wants you to beat Boston at their game. Wants to, you know, we're gonna physical up on this one. We're gonna roll up our sleeves. We're gonna beat you in the alley before we beat you in our barn.
Ego can be great fuel, and ego can be a detriment. And in the Bruins' case, ego is great fuel. They believe that they can beat up anybody in the league, and they can.
They can.
In the Penguins' case, it's different. And I'll give you another example of where ego is a problem. Sidney Crosby after game two said something along the lines of, when we were in the Flyers series, we were convinced every single game we could score five goals. That's not the case in this series, but, and I'm thinking to myself, really? Because I kind of feel that's the case with the Penguins. Like, no matter who the opponent is, they believe their kung fu is so strong that they can score five goals with their style of play. And they could do it against the Islanders, they could do it against the Senators, but they sure as shit ain't doing it against the Bruins.
You know, that's the way, and the best team for that example is the 1980s Edmonton Oilers, and I love this about them. This is the 80s Oilers were the only team that I ever saw who got mad if you had the nerve to score against them. Like, you see on everyone's face, how dare you score against us? And they whip off three goals really fast. You know, Messi's line would come in, Messi would have one, Anderson would have one, they go back to the bench, and they're up a puck. I think that's the kind of vibe that you're talking about right now with the Pittsburgh Penguins. They have that, you score four, we'll score five.
Right.
The 70s Bruins had this too with Jerry Cheevers. You score six, we'll score seven. That's the way it's going to be. That's what Pittsburgh in the back of their mind has.
When you're playing against an Islanders team that just figured out how to fly out of the nest, when you play a Senators team that was a shell of itself, and now all of a sudden you're playing an actual hockey team with the best defensive players in the league on their roster, and guess what? Can't score at will. Power play hasn't scored a goal in two games against the Bruins. They haven't even gotten any chances.
Here's what I can understand. Hustle is one thing and smarts is another. You know that tic-tac-toe play yesterday in the first period?
Mm-hmm.
Down low in the Pittsburgh zone? It's not hard to put a stick in a passing lane, is it?
No, it's not.
You can get one pass through, right, on an NHL team. How do you get that many?
In the slot, no less. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Down low. Yeah. Dude, these passes are all dots in. And they're making these passes across the ice.
The passes that were made on that play looked like they were for Vokoun's benefit. I mean, that's how close they were to the crease. It was insane how you allowed it to happen. But we saw it all over the ice in game two. I mean, they were completely disinterested. Like I wrote on Puck Daddy this morning, it looked that they had the interest in this game like it was a neutral site preseason game at some point, the Penguins. I mean, Malkin doing flyby. Let's call out some of the people that we watched last night who were epically terrible. Malkin was terrible. He was just he was floating around. He got the Ovechkin cam treatment on NBC last night where they put him
on,
showing
him
floating around and not being engaged defensively. Like, if you get that treatment, you're playing terrible hockey. Letang, can I just say right now that if the awards balloting were actual paper ballots, you would see beat writers around this country burning them right now had they voted for Chris Letang for the Norris. He has been terrible in this series and in previous series. He was on the ice for what? I think four goals last night.
I'm so shocked that pizza he threw up the middle that got picked off at the point. I know you look up and you see that opening for a second. It is a lazy play because you think that's your option, but when do you do that?
He has been atrocious. And he, listen, I know that the goaltending thing is very divisive, and I know that you have warring factions of Marc-Andre Fleury lovers and Marc-Andre Fleury haters. I'm probably towards the hater side, but I'll say this about Vokoun. Eventually you have to make a save, okay? And I know that we have this... We have this thing in our hockey culture, and especially in the media culture, where you look at something that happens early on in a play and say, well, it's not the goalie's fault that Sidney Crosby turned the puck over. Yeah, but it is the goalie's fault when he doesn't make a save less than 30 seconds into a playoff game. You're there to make a save. It's your job.
Yeah.
It's your actual job description to be the last line of defense for your team. So I understand the Penguins played like dog shit in front of Vokoun last night. We all saw it. But I am not going to exonerate their starting goaltender in his inability to make that save. You make that save, potentially the entire game is different because the same thing happened in two that happened in one. Bruins got up early, Penguins sulked. That's exactly what happened twice now. So you make that save, maybe it's a different game. I am not going to sit here and say it's Sidney Crosby's fault that goal was scored. Sidney Crosby led to there being a scoring opportunity. At the end of the day, it's on Vokoun to make the save.
That's you. In Sid's defense, although he pinned it all on himself afterwards, that's a bouncing puck that went over his stick. And he was starting flat-footed, and Marchand had a couple of steps. So just breezed right by him. But I think Vokoun's got to have that. I'm sorry if it's a breakaway. You got to have that if you're Thomas Vokoun. It's like let me give you an example. Let me tell you what every coach, every coach in the NHL has said this to their goalie coach. You ready about that? Ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Does every deflected shot have to go in? Can he not stop one deflected shot? How many times drives coaches crazy? How many times have you heard this go? Oh well, it went in, sure, but it was deflected. It was deflected. Can he stop one? Can he stop two?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe? Please? One? Two? There are very few coaches. Actually, Tortorella was like this in Tampa. Very few coaches that get on their goaltenders and call them out publicly. I'm with you, Wish. It is really we have this idea that goaltenders are so psychologically frail. They're these little sort of China dolls. And don't even look at them sideways or they might crack. You know, these are professional athletes. And listen, by the time you get to the NHL, if you're a goaltender, if you're anyone, like ask any player in the NHL, you have heard and read everything about your game. You've heard it. You've read it. You've seen it. People tearing apart your game, how you play, your choices, all of you don't belong in this league. You know, everybody has heard that growing up at a certain level. Why do we think that all of a sudden when they get to the NHL, they're sort of psychologically frail? Why do they always get a pass?
Well, we think that because the stakes are higher is why we think that.
And you think, though, you're going to lose them and also they're going to start letting in goals on purpose? Like, they are professionals, and as much as they're playing for a team, they're also playing for themselves and for their contracts.
And maybe the leash is shorter in the NHL, too, as compared to other levels. Don't you think?
In what way? I think the leash is as far as accepting mediocre play.
As far as jettisoning mediocre players. I think the timer is shorter in the National Hockey League than at other levels. No,
for goalies or for all
for
players.
For goalies.
Oh yeah, for sure. Oh yeah, for
yeah.
Sure.
Because in lower levels, you're there to learn, you're there to develop your game, what have you. If you come up to the NHL and you're a sieve, you're not going to get the same
kind of
leeway. Yeah.
See you later. Unless there's an injury, you ain't coming back here, bud.
Now, speaking of sieves, I would start Fleury in Game 3. I don't know about you.
Let me ask you this question then. If you do, are you doing it because he's your money goaltender or you think he gives you the best chance to win?
I'm doing it for both reasons.
You think Fleury right now gives you the best chance to win if you're doing Boston?
I think he's 4-1 in his last five in Boston with a save percentage above .950.
How are you feeling about him right now, though?
Right now, your hope is that he cleared his head by sitting on the bench for nearly a month, and your hope is that by getting him into Game 2, you won't have the shell-shockedness. You won't see him give up some of those goals that he gave up in 2 and 3 because now he's over the jitter. You're hoping that. It may not be the case, but you're hoping that. But it's to speak to the other part of your question. If they're gonna win this series, it ain't gonna be Jerome Iginla, and it ain't gonna be Brennan Morrow. It's gonna be Crosby, Malkin. It's gonna be Orpik. It's gonna be Letang. It's gonna be the guys that have been there for this team from the Cup year through now, and Fleury is one of them. And I like the idea of I'm gonna put this guy back in and give this team back to my guys that have rings, and we're going to do this together. The core is going to lead us. There's something to be said for that.
There is, but there doesn't seem to be the one missing ingredient in that wish is there doesn't seem to be that us against the world factor in all of this. You know what I mean? I think that works for Malkin and Crosby and the guys that have been there, Letang and Marcon. I think you're bang on about that if there is that us against the world vibe, but I don't sense that in this series. Do you? Because I don't.
Not yet, but maybe. I mean, I think losing Game 2 the way they did, and they're going to have the walls of their dressing room could look like the walls of Kevin Spacey's apartment in 7. That's how many news clippings that they could find telling everybody how terrible they were in Game 2. Like, if they wanted to, they could totally use an us against the world thing in the sense that, well, nobody thinks we can win this series now. But more to the my biggest concern about bringing Fleury back with that theory that, you know, they can rally the troops by getting the core back together is this. How much confidence do they actually have in him? Because it was clear that they didn't have any confidence in him when he left. Has that changed at all, or do those guys not believe in him as a playoff goalie anymore? And it also speaks to the idea that we really don't know from a psychological standpoint what's going on with this team. And by that I mean this. They bought in Brennan Morrow. They bought in Jerome Iginla. And these are guys that used to be captains. Okay? Captains in their old stopping grounds. What's happening in that room right now? Do they have a say? Do they step up and lead? Because the leaders on this team have been there for quite some time. And the leaders on this team have won together. And I was always curious about that dynamic in that room. How much does Iginla say in a meeting? And how much do those players that are in the core say, yeah, it's nice, Jerome, but no ring. So we'll just listen to ourselves.
That's stiff, but not necessarily untrue. I don't know. I'm not in that room, so I don't speak regularly with anyone who is in that room, so I couldn't tell you. Something though that Adrian on Twitter brings up: PJ Stock finally brought up something you've been harping on. I missed this last night. They traded and got slower, and now they can't skate by the Bruins. Remember we said that at the deadline?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that I've seen a team go out there and deliberately get slower. Douglas Murray, Brendan Morrow, Jerome Iginla. And they got by the Islanders, okay. They got by the Ottawa Senators, okay. But now perhaps we need to rely on speed. It's not there.
Right.
Because you brought in three slower players. Here's the litmus test for the Pittsburgh Penguins on how you can tell whether they have faith in their goaltender or not. Watch what happens when the puck turns over in the Pittsburgh zone and they get possession. Normally, when they have confidence in their goaltender, the forwards are out of the zone fast, specifically Crosby. There's no one out of that zone quicker than Crosby. have a look at when the puck turns over in Boston in the Pittsburgh zone where the centerman is. Because if he's still down low just above the hash marks, they're still not feeling it for their goaltender. If the defenseman looks up and their forwards are gone, then they're feeling it for Marc-Andre Fleury or Thomas Focun.
Well,
that's how you'll know.
You know that part of their changes for the next game has got to be a dialing of it back to a more defensive mode.
Big time.
You know, playing more of a road game than obviously they've been playing at home. It's interesting. I don't know, man. I still think they're alive in this series, but boy, they got such an ass kicking in game two.
Yeah, but you are right. I mean, there's just still too much talent on the team to say this thing is over. And I hate to bring up the past, but we have seen a Bruins team like this. Geez, implode after going up 3-0. Never mind 2-0. Right?
Yeah, but we've also seen a Penguins team unravel. That's a really
against Philadelphia last year. I know.
If they go on to lose this series, man, now all of a sudden they've got a rap as cemented as any rap you want to give the Capitals or Sharks. Now they don't just lose; they unravel. You can get to them. You can get to them. That's a big flaw. That's a fatal flaw for a team. If you know coming
never,
into a series, as long as you just piss them off and hit them hard and punch them in the face, that they'll just unravel. And that's what's happened to the Penguins now.
But unlike the San Jose Sharks, with that choking rap, get there close, or the Washington Capitals, they'll never have it as bad as Washington or San Jose because they have won a cup with this
team. They've won. Right.
That's it. Like, your point is not, you know, less valid because of that. They will still have that.
Well, I think
it won't be like San Jose or Washington.
You go into a game seven with San Jose or Washington, you're still assuming in the back of your head they're going to choke. You'll never assume that the Penguins are going to lose. But there's clearly a path to victory now. I mean, no question about that. Yeah, it's a tough one. It is a tough one.
You mentioned Dan Bylsma as well. Mm-hmm. Do you think he's safe out of all this? Like, let's say Boston rolls over on Pittsburgh in games 3 and 4. It's a sweep. Look out. You've seen the last of Pittsburgh at the Consol Energy Center. Bylsma okay?
I can't see them getting rid of a coach that led them to the conference final. I think the reaction is they veer violently towards trying to muscle up, become tougher, become whatever, to compete with the Bruins. Because frankly, it's going to go through the Bruins for the next few years.
But hang on. Don't you think they did that at deadline? Gillen's pretty tough character. Morrow's pretty tough guy. Douglas Murray's pretty tough guy.
That's true.
I remember the trade. You made this point on this podcast. These trades were made knowing that Pittsburgh, if they want to get out of the East, are going to have to face the Boston Bruins.
That's a good point.
So they've done that.
They've done that. And they've lost.
Bingo. 2-0. Down 2-0. Their own building. In front of your own fans.
Well, obviously they have to go further. They got to swap out Kunitz for Klo.
The Sabres re-up with John Scott. That's it.
Fancy Dupuis for Nathan Horton. You just got to get really, really tough.
That's right. Walk away from Pascal Dupuis. Let him walk as a UFA, but go hard after David Clarkson.
We've come around to it in a roundabout way, but let's just tie a bow around this because you've hit the nail on the head, which is that their reaction to the Bruins was what they did at the deadline. What they did at the deadline made them a slower team, and now they're down 2-0 to the Bruins. And it kind of brings you back to another team that Ben Mathewson mentions. The Sabres tried to muscle up to the Bruins and ended up even worse than before.
They did.
This is kind of the same thing. This is kind of the Bruins psychologically forcing a team to become something they're not, and then that team not being as good because of it.
Yeah. It's true. You know, the principle of going sort of head-to-head and beating someone at their own game, it's tempting and it makes a nice story and it feels great, but it's not really the smartest thing to do. You know, I trained in martial arts for years and I took a style of karate called goju, which means hard soft. If someone comes at you hard, you go back soft.
That's a giant monster.
If a straight line, yeah. If a punch comes at you with a straight line, you meet it at an angle. If something comes at you at an angle, you meet it with a straight line. That's sort of the principle. It's all based in more Chinese martial arts and Japanese and Okinawan. But nonetheless, that's probably the smartest thing to do when it comes to competition. You can't beat the Boston Bruins at their own game. Mm. You can't. you want to chase that because it makes you feel tough. Well, that's cool. You're going to be gone in four. You can't do that.
Right.
And to hear the Penguins after the game, to the earlier point, say, we're not playing our game, we're not playing our game. Well, that's all on you guys. Don't complain about it. That's a choice. That's a choice all those players have made. And we should, you know, we focus as much from the Pittsburgh point of view here. How about giving it up for the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, right.
How about giving it up for the Boston Bruins who, I mean, how many times have you seen a team go up 3-0 in the first period, but in the final minutes last night, Brandon Sutter, final minute of the first period, makes it 3-1. All of a sudden there's a flicker and there's a little bit of life. And what do the Bruins do? Off the next draw, march it all the way down the field and score again. Snuffed it. That second Brad Marchand goal was the one that killed it. Totally killed it for the Pittsburgh Penguins. That little flicker of emotion that we still have a shot here, momentum going into the second period, was all snuffed out by the second Brad Marchand goal. Hmm. And Tuukka Rask's been good, bud.
Yep.
Tuukka Rask plays some good hockey.
You know, I understand what you're saying, but clearly you're missing the point, which is that it's not the Bruins winning, it's the Penguins losing. Everybody knows this.
it's always got to be about the Pittsburgh Penguins and how they've lost. Never mind how the Boston Bruins right. have won. Have, you know, systematically, you know, unnerved and unrattled, and rattled, the Pittsburgh Penguins here, who everyone thought was going to the Stanley Cup. And they still might, but so far, it just don't look good. They had a big scare against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it seems to have inspired them to mind their knitting the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not taking shortcuts.
Indeed. Casey Ippolito writes in, F, the grade is F, because oof. I cannot come up with a single compelling thing about either series, Random Penguin, Yuri Schlieger.
I liked him. I thought he was a really good defenseman.
Rob Fado writes in about the jersey changes. I feel like teams are afraid to make many changes to a jersey. Look at the Islanders, the Islanders they tried to release. The hardcore old-time fans pretty much went in with a closed mind and immediately said it sucked. I thought it was a pretty decent jersey. Oof. I was also 7 at the time. So there you go. It's funny because some teams are pretty aggressive about changing their look. I mean, the Buffalo Sabres, for about a 15-year span, I think might have had 4 different distinct jerseys during that span, which is a lot, including
yeah.
the Buffalo look.
Remember the red ones? Oh, jeez. They went through a period of fashion. Like, they went through their, like, you know how everyone has in their life, you know, the lost years,
mm-hmm.
where, you know what? Too much with the booze, too much with the drugs. I don't know what I was thinking.
Stuck on an island with Jack and Kate and others. Oh, wait, no, sorry.
Yeah, everyone has that in their life, right? I did. You probably did. Everyone listening probably did. You make some bad decisions because you're being influenced by various things. It seems as if, you know, Buffalo was sort of wandering in that wilderness for a while until they realized we had it pretty good.
Yeah.
That logo and that jersey, that's pretty sweet.
That's an iconic logo.
The swords, I love it. I love it.
You know why it's an iconic logo? Because I could show that to an Aboriginal, and they could probably glean what team it is. Look, it's a Buffalo. Two swords. The Buffalo Sabres, ladies and gentlemen.
Buffalo swords. Actually, it's Sabres, but close enough.
Yeah, close enough. Brian Massimetti writes in, I say A+. The hockey has been really interesting and really entertaining, albeit not super tight. I love that the Pens are falling apart because I don't want to see a Yankees-like team in hockey. Plus, it's leaning towards an original arbitrary Six Cup final.
Thank you for
that. It would be kind of Yankees-like. Core augmented by other great players from other teams. That kind of makes sense to me.
And future Hall of Famers. Although, unless you have a rooting interest for or against one team, like unless you have a burning love or a burning hatred for one of the teams that are left in the final four, I mm-hmm. don't know how you can give this a grade above a D. Mm-hmm. Like to the gentleman that just tweeted in, I mean, he hates the Penguins. He wants to see them, you know, do poorly, fueled by that negative emotion. I get that. Then you would be loving this. This is great. Look at him get pumped last night. Curb stomp by the Boston Bruins. That's great. That's fun. Yay! But it's not good hockey.
Are you excited by the prospect of a Chicago-Boston final?
Yes, if Chicago plays the way that Pittsburgh should be playing right now, yes.
Okay, because there's a part of me that's excited. Like, I think that obviously the matchup itself is going to generate ridiculous numbers for the league.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that thinks that could be some of the fuggliest hockey that we've seen all year.
You think so? Why?
Two boxers with wobbly legs throwing haymakers the entire time. It could be beautiful and physical and wonderful like the Kings and the Blues, but it could also just be two teams that dial it back into defensive mode and it's just ugh.
But that does happen in the Stanley Cup Final, though.
That's what I'm talking about. That's going to happen naturally, right?
But that happens to every team, right? I mean, the best example of that, we talked about this last week in the podcast, was Tampa. When they won the cup under John Tortorella. Remember that safe as death fly zone hockey? Mm-hmm. They were playing all season long. What happened when they got to the Stanley Cup final? How boring was that Stanley Cup final? Oh my God, it was awful. It was such boring hockey to watch. But well, that's what happens. You're like, it was we can't lose it now.
Dark, spooky cloud of the lockout that was going to happen. That was true. Interesting question from Bobby Bobby D. Sorry, I'm never going to get the last name around.
Yeah.
Bobby writes in. Seabrook approached Taves in Detroit and basically told him to get his head together. Does anyone do that to Crosby? And if so, who? That's a good question. I don't think there's anybody in that roster that does that. Do you?
Who would be the guy to tell him to calm down?
I'll tell you who it would have been back in the day. Be Billy Guerin.
Max Talbot.
Yeah. They had those guys back in the day. I don't know who would it be
who
now.
Who would that guy be now? Well, clearly Matt Cook.
He's reformed after all.
That is an excellent point. Who's there to say, dude, we got this? Well, you know what? If you were there longer, and maybe it already doesn't matter because the background with Hockey Canada is Jerome McGinley.
Yeah. Maybe it would be.
Could that be the, I mean.
Although he's not one to step on toes. I don't know. Good call. Good question. This is from Edward G. Gorsensky. Thank you.
It's not bad. Good job.
A-plus for the conference finals. As a Bruins fan, the best part of this of this all isn't that the Bees are dominating on the ice. It's that the Bruins are so firmly planted in the heads of the players, the coaches, and the front office. All of these teams trying to toughen up to play their game. The deck is loaded against them. It's like trying to ask a calligrapher to become a boxer. Sure, you can do it, but not without irreparable damage to your previous way of life. That, Edward, is an analogy I can honestly say I've never heard.
Is that Jack Edwards?
Good.
Is that Jack Edwards that just sent you that email? Because that was goddamn poetry right there, Greg Wyshynski.
That's
turning
good.
A calligrapher into a boxer. Yeah, again. Cows don't make ham. Be yourself. Be your own team. They're so, singularly focused on the Boston Bruins and playing that style of game and beating them at that style of game. But there were a couple of moments yesterday where they had a chance to really engage and they just kind of stood around. Like, how many times do you see Derek Englund go at Milan Lucic and then just stand there? Like, if you're going to go at him and you're down four pucks, drop your gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Cross-check him in the face.
Yeah, why did we
have
that?
Do something.
How do you...
Right?
Yeah, that's,
if you're going to do something...
That's an excellent point. What does it say about this series when we didn't get a giant brawl? We didn't get a littered ice of gloves and sticks in a 6-1 ass-kicking on home ice? That's the first time I thought about that today, actually.
That's where your San Jose analogy is perfect, Greg. Because much like the San Jose Sharks, last night we saw a Pittsburgh Penguins team that just lost too easy.
They didn't give a shit by the third period.
I know. Just wanted to get it over with.
What happened to that message sending? You know what I mean? Is it because they're playing the Bruins and they just don't want to get pummeled?
Maybe, but there were a couple of times. I'm focusing on England specifically with Milan Lucic, but they're lined up on the same side and they're with each other a bunch in the corners and collided a number of times. What's it take to pop him in the face?
Yeah. Seriously. That's interesting.
Got me.
Couple more things house cleaning wise before we end this episode of the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Competition committee meeting today in Toronto. The revamped, rejiggered competition committee where hopefully there won't be any gridlock.
A lot of Europeans on that.
Oh yeah. It's almost like a meeting at The Hague. No, it's a good. I mean, it's not a fair mix of players, but at least it's a different mix of players, and they can maybe get something done. Visors we talked about yesterday. That's going to be on the docket. Yeah. Two of the things I heard are on the docket, which I think are kind of interesting. They are going to talk about the trapezoid. They will discuss the trapezoid, whether good. It would be a good thing or a bad thing to continue to have it. They'll be discussing that. They're going to talk about embellishment. They're going to talk about the icing rules. And they're going to talk about goalie equipment. And In Goal yeah. magazine, I believe, is where you can find a really interesting interview with Corey Schneider with regard to the competition committee.
Competition.
He is the lone goaltender, I believe, on that committee.
You want to get Kevin Woodley on then, our buddy from In Goal? Talk about it?
We can get tomorrow.
Booking on the fly. Sure.
Absolutely.
All right.
Why
see if
not?
We can get Kevin Woodley on.
So I'd be interested to see exactly what the discussion is on the trapezoid. Being that Turco is retired and Marty will be retired at some point, why do they need it anymore, right?
Exactly. The goaltenders they put it in there for are gone.
Yeah, are gone. Exactly. And then the other thing that I wanted to discuss at the end of the show, we didn't talk about it yesterday, but reports that Tim Thomas, playoff hero, could emerge from his bunker, make a comeback next year, but maybe not in the National Hockey League, but in Europe.
Wait a minute. If he's complaining about how socialist America is now, he's going to go play in Europe?
Evidently.
Enjoy that, Tim. I think he finds a home in the NHL, bud. Don't you? I mean, it's not going to be a $5 million home, but a $2.5 million home.
He's a perfect temporary fix, right? Don't you think so? He'd be perfect for a team for a team that thinks it's very close,
like the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Maybe.
To
fantasy cast that one, there's only one option for the Penguins if they needed a goalie. Which is to
Tom Barrasso?
No, bring back a Ginla, and sign Ryan and trade for Ryan Miller. So you get Ryan Miller, Troy McGinley, and Sidney Crosby all on the same team. Obviously.
Couldn't you see Thomas playing for the Penguins? I mean, if they do something, listen. If it's 2 years in a row where Marc-Andre Fleury implodes, jeez, that's a tough decision. But if they end up doing something with the goaltender, can't you see them coming back? Quick fix with Tim Thomas and the Penguins this year, if he's available, draft Zach Fucali of the Halifax Mooseheads in the first round, the top-ranked goaltender in the draft.
So what you're saying is that the Pittsburgh Penguins, if they needed a goaltender, would bring in Tim Thomas, and that would not be a reaction to the Bruins?
Oh, complete reaction. But not just a reaction to the Bruins, because it would be a reaction to the Islanders who got to Marc-Andre Fleury. It would
so
be against
great.
The Ottawa Senators who didn't even get a chance to watch
Tim
Marc-Andre
Thomas
Fleury.
Versus the Bruins in a conference final would be the
yeah,
best
bud,
thing that's ever
you
happened.
You wouldn't love that? And have like Tim Thomas like hit Brad Marchand in the face with a waffle? Come
the
on.
Only way it could be better is if it was an election year. All that going too. All right, everybody. That is the show for today. Thanks to Tracy Myers of CSN Chicago for joining us to talk about Game 3 tonight. Kings and Blackhawks. Your boy Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports will be watching and tweeting and covering that one tonight.
It's a 9:00 start. Jeff Merrick, yours truly, will be working back at work today. Wish. I don't want to go back to work. You don't work, Merrick. Shut up. Back at work tonight, Hockey Central, 11:00, working with Brad May and your buddy from Trade Deadline, Greg Wyshynski, Gord Stellick.
Gord
Stellick. On the desk this evening. Yeah, man.
Me and Gord, the man who put up with my baby diarrhea pants all throughout Trade Deadline.
Legendary. Legendary. Now, why can't you use that for your avatar?
Baby diarrhea pants?
Yeah.
Because my MST3K avatar on Twitter is iconic.
It is iconic. Okay, maybe you should use it just for your picture then on Yahoo.
Do you understand the myriad of shit I took because Yahoo made me change the cigar and sunglasses thing?
Yeah, I know. I bet you did.
People went
nuts. I
like
the cigar and sunglasses thing. I know, as well they should.
Why?
That's a great shot.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say a little bit phallic, too.
Whoa. Hey, now.
Hey, man. Right. Although, as Sigmund Freud once said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Calm down.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today. We will talk to you tomorrow. Going postal tomorrow if you want to get in under the before the wire. PuckDaddyBlog@Yahoo.com. Ask us anything. In fact, we already have like 3 or 4 emails in for going postal, by the way.
Nice.
The people love it.
It's a fun day.
Enjoy the puck, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.